Houston Dynamo, Portland Timbers, Sporting Kansas, Los Angeles Galaxy,
Pitch Pass,
Toronto FC, Real Salt Lake,
this is my red, white, and blue.
Chicago Fire,
this is my anthem to you.
Columbus Crew, FC Dallas, New York Red Bulls.
Pitch Pass, your all-access credential to the people that matter in MLS. Here's your host, Greg Roach.
Greetings, welcome to another edition of Pitch Pass. We'll get this out quickly because we got a lot to talk about with our guest. At Pitch Pass to follow us on Twitter, pitchpass.com to get everything about the show. And you can follow our guest today on his Twitter, at Bobby Boswell. He is the World Cup analyst, breaking down everything that we've been seeing from a player's point of view. He is a defender for DC United. It's Bobby Boswell. The White Pirlo joins us right now on Pitch. I'm sorry, hashtag White Pirlo. We got to keep our social networking, our social media crisp, Bobby. That's what we got to do.
Yeah, I agree. I want to update this so I'm no longer the hashtag White Pirlo.
Wait a second. You were White Pirlo. We're trying to make this a phenomenon on Twitter, and now you're telling me you're switching it up again?
Yeah, I have to. It's just really people were kind of offended by it. They
why?
They thought I was insulting like his game in general, just associating myself with him. So I've decided I'm going to be the hashtag Tan Mueller.
All right. I mean, you look and sound like a bit of a bandwagon jumper, and I don't know if you've switched before, but Italy being out, now you're switching to Germany, who's still in.
I switched about 15 minutes ago.
Okay. So, yeah, exactly. As soon as the Germany match ended, you're now hashtag Tan Mueller.
Hashtags have to be relevant, and I'm irrelevant with an Italian, so now I'm Tan Mueller. I'll probably be someone new by the final.
I've got a better hashtag for you for that, by the way, because
okay.
And I noticed it not when they played Algeria for the U.S. match, and they do that during the national anthem. They pan across the entire 11 as they're all arm in arm, and then with Mueller, the camera has to duck down 4 or 5 feet to get to him, and then it goes back up for the next guy in line. You could be hashtag Tall Mueller.
There you go. Well, I wanted to keep people. There was a bit of an argument over whether Pirlo was white or not.
That's the other thing. I don't know. That's when you said White Pirlo. I was like, isn't he white? So what does that make? I was confused about that.
Yeah, that confused a lot of people, and I didn't really have a solid answer for that. So I'm going. Mixing it up. I'm Tan now.
Tan Mueller.
I'm Tan Mueller. Yeah.
Well,
so that's. It's more politically correct.
I guess so. I mean, yes, I guess. Sure. I like Tall Mueller better, but if you want to go with Tan Mueller, that's fine. And then next week when we talk for the leading up to the finals, you'll give me your new hashtag with whoever is who's still alive in the tournament.
I'm probably going to be some Colombian type of dancer. I'll be like the male Shakira.
Jaimes. You'll be something Jaimes. Hashtag something Jaimes. Jaimes.
Yeah,
Jaimes. Sorry. And then I thought you were going to break more news, because if people who didn't download the last episode of Pitch Pass, which you can do at pitchpass.com, you said that you were the white Gooch, but since Gooch was training with DC United, that you had to change. And I thought maybe you said we have to change again because Pirlo is now training with DC United.
No,
that's not happening.
That would be nothing against Gooch, but if Pirlo were training with us, that would probably be a little cooler.
Yeah. Well, now, see, you didn't have to go there. Jeez.
I mean, Gooch is a great guy. I just feel like Pirlo's quotes alone would make him entertaining every day.
I'd like to see you interviewing Pirlo, but him only speaking in Italian and not understanding you, and you only speaking English and you not understanding him. I feel like that'd be gold.
That would probably just be how we normally talk.
Who would be upset with a Pirlo signing for DC United? Would it be Perry? Because as we know, Pirlo barely moves on the field, which give him even more ground to cover.
I don't know. I don't think anyone would be upset. I think one of our coaches, Enzo, from he's Canadian slash Italian. I mean, his opportunity to speak to Pirlo every day in Italian, involving hand gestures and talking about pasta and wine, would probably. I mean, he'd be like a kid in a candy store, to be honest.
And I thought the white Pirlo thing you said was racist. Meanwhile, you're going to go with wine and pasta and hand gestures when referring to Italians. Nice work.
I mean, you clearly don't follow Pirlo on his fake Twitter account. He talks about eating pasta at like fine Italian establishments, and he's a wino. He said his mom used to put wine in his water, and that's why he likes wine so much.
You've really done your research on the white Pirlo. Nice work.
I know Pirlo better than the average soccer fan. So
maybe better than himself. I don't know.
Yeah, maybe. That's why it probably would never be good if I met him. I would just creep him out.
So is it time for me to gloat about the Netherlands and how you undersold them, even though you claim to be a fan of Oranje? Or do we save that for later on in the podcast? How do you want to make this? How do you want to break this down?
I mean, I have them winning the World Cup. So I don't know how you can say. I don't know how you can say that I'm. I literally was so angry during the Mexico game that I left my house in the 80. It was like the 85th minute.
Yeah.
And I literally think that I should never watch them play again, and they'll win the whole thing.
Wait, let me ask you this, because I saw a lot on the Twitter about people going, you know, I hate Mexico, but we've got to support CONCACAF, so I've got to pull for Mexico. Do you fall into that category, or are you like, screw that, I hate playing Mexico, I hate the way they play soccer. As an American, I am going whoever plays against Mexico.
No, I think it's a little kind of a torn thing for me. I played enough in Mexico. Like, it's not that I just don't understand why Mexicans hate America so much when we go down there. Like, it's you know, I've been in games where they burned our flag. And I remember we in 2005, we played down there and they were chanting Osama. And it's just like some of the stuff they do, I don't think they realize how vulgar it is, or maybe they do and they just don't care.
They don't care. Yeah.
For a long, long time, I was an anti, you know, just because when someone dislikes you that much, it's kind of hard to be on to support them. But I was hoping, you know, I'm hoping CONCACAF does well, just because the better that CONCACAF does, I think it'll do better for our American players in terms of getting better opportunities to go play at better teams.
Well, Costa Rica's through. We've got that as we record this. So that's. I mean, look, if one of the two were going to go, if you would say only one of two teams from CONCACAF will get through before the U.S. plays, I would choose Costa Rica every time. So then you get that.
Yeah, I didn't see that coming. I mean, I still can't believe that's going on. But I mean, to be honest, they look good when they play. I thought all the CONCACAF. I mean, I think Honduras was a bit of a surprise for me, but other than that, I thought all of CONCACAF played really well. And I think some of the advantages that the CONCACAF teams have over some of these other teams is they've known their team a lot longer. Meaning, some of these teams, you know, they're putting guys in there they've never, you know, it's like their third time with the national team ever. And those are like your starters, and then you've got some teams where they've been playing together for 4 years. So obviously they play much better soccer in terms of the team soccer. But Costa Rica was a complete anomaly in my World Cup bracket.
But you know, and I don't know, I don't have any facts to back this up because it just occurred to me. But a lot of those Central American teams, countries, don't they owe like a little bit of thanks MLS, because I feel like that's raised their game, their level of skill even more than what they had coming out of their countries, and when they were just kind of having to rely only on playing within their own countries or maybe going to Scandinavia. This other outlet of MLS maybe just hasn't helped US, but maybe it's helped other countries as well.
Maybe.
All right, so you don't buy into that. You don't buy into that.
I think
that's
a stretch, because I think the players that have done really well for, you know, Costa Rica and Mexico and you know, those aren't.
Well, not Mexico per se, but Honduras for sure, I would think.
Yeah, but I think some of the guys, I think any league where guys can go and it's competitive and they get games and they play, obviously, and I think that a lot of those guys don't have the, you know, they're not Euro snobs per se, where they say, okay, if I get an opportunity to go play in America, I'll go do it. You know, they don't need $5 million.
Yeah.
You know, and then there are some guys that do, and those are guys that are, you know, either in their home country or they're playing over somewhere in Europe or China or Greece or, you know, somewhere kind of outrageous. But I think that, you know, those guys down there realize that the league is good and that it's beneficial to them to be playing every game. And, you know, they know if they come here, they'll have a fair chance because our league, you know, our league doesn't really discriminate in terms of bringing guys in.
Do you have, and because I know you've played with Oscar Boniek Garcia and I'm sure a lot of other Central American players, one of the things that I've read is, you know, you've given some of the advantages, and then the other advantage I always hear is that they don't have to worry about getting paid. Have you heard any horror stories from any of your Central American teammates where that is an issue?
Well, there's one reoccurring theme with most Central American players, and whether I talk too much or they just really don't speak English, we don't have a whole lot of dialogue because they always tell me they don't speak much English. So
yeah,
our conversations are very broken.
Yeah, they tell you that.
Yeah, they tell me that,
yeah.
But then I'll see them talking to like
exactly.
You know, a guy that doesn't speak
any Spanish. Yeah,
they have fluent hour long conversations, but yeah, I think it's like maybe a Rosetta Stone like level six or something that I don't have yet. But no, I've heard a couple horror stories, but most of the horror stories come from Europe, you know, Greece or Turkey, you know, kind of Eastern Europe. They don't, you know, you don't hear a whole lot of horror stories about Central America. I think some of the other horror stories come from South America, where there's like kidnapping threats,
yeah.
And there's, you know, safety of the families. You know, just it's like if you're a soccer player, you know, you're in danger, and the day you retire, you're no longer in danger. It's kind of crazy the way it's described, but you don't hear too many crazy things about Central America. I think they kind of idolize the players. Like when we've been down there, you know, we had Luciano Emilio, he played in Honduras, and we went down there and he was a god. And it's very similar with Oscar Boniek. You know, when we went down there, they love him and he's their man. And Carlo Costa, same thing. So, you know, those guys are idolized. I don't hear a whole lot of safety issues, but, you know, most of those guys are really down to earth. They're superstars and they're big names where they come from, and they're just very under the radar. You know, it's always about the team. It's not about them usually, and that's pretty refreshing.
I hear the same thing happens to you when you're in Tampa. Like you can't as soon as you touch the ground, it's just mob scenes until you take off again.
Yeah, I fly with an alias when I go to Tampa. It's,
got it.
You know, my family's just asked me not to come anymore.
That's the reason.
This whole time I've been wondering what it was, and it must be because of the paparazzi and all the adoring female fans outside my house.
What do you think about the narrative I've been saying on Twitter at Pitch Pass, the false narrative of the Europeans don't play well in South America? Sure, we could have said that the last few times they played in South America. But these guys in this day and age, it's not like they're taking a ferry over and it's a week long sojourn over to South America. They're flying first class. They're staying in 5-star hotels. They're doing this much traveling on a regular basis to do on their club level teams. So can we put that narrative to bed once and for all? Or is there something traveling from Europe to South America that inherently, quote unquote, makes them play bad?
I think there's a couple things that go into it. I don't discredit that. I think that it's so much travel that they're just not used to. You know, you talk about these guys, usually they take trains to places and buses, and then they're going places where they're constantly flying, and I definitely think that if you're not used to the humidity and the rainforest and all that stuff, I mean, the numbers don't lie. I think it's every team that's played in the north or in the rainforest and the real, you know, high humidity, they've lost every single game, not tied or won. I think they've lost every time. So, you know, like we think we talked about it last time we spoke, and it's guys you would think are used to it. And it's just, I don't know whether it's you think they have their own dietitians and they're bringing their own food or they're getting high quality food, but there's got to be some things going into it, you know. Maybe your routine's got to be broken up. I'm sure there's security up the wazoo, so they probably can't get out and do what they maybe normally would do. And you know, there's definitely some some different types of things that, that these guys from Europe are experiencing because they don't look as dominant. And I think a part of it's a lot of the Central and South American teams feel a little more at home. They're used to this environment. They're used to the crowds. They're used to the lifestyle that's going on in the country that's being hosted by. And I think that's why maybe they're doing a lot better.
Is that the biggest thing that you hear from DP type players who come over off the pitch? I mean, we always hear about on the pitch, they say about how much more physical than they're what they're used to. But off the field, is it the travel? Do you get that sigh when they realize how long some of these flights are?
Yeah, I think guys are just blown away. Yeah, absolutely. Everyone I've played with is they can't believe, you know, that like I can say, you know, to go from Houston to Vancouver or to go from DC to LA or, you know, it's just you get on, you're sitting there, you show up and you're like, how long? You're like six hours. You're like, you're kidding me. And, you know, guys are, they're a little weirded out by it. But I think some guys use it as an excuse, you know, that oh, I feel like crap because of that. And, you know, some guys are just like, I'm not used to it, but I'll fight through it. They've got technology now, you know, you get these recovery pants you wear on, you wear compression pants on the airplanes and they do all this, they got these boots you wear when you get there, you can flush your legs out. And there's a lot of technology, but I think a lot of it's more mental than anything, you know, time zones and all that other.
Yeah, it sounded like you were going to go old man on me and say this horse pucky that they're making me wear these pants and they've got the boots on and now I've got to flush out my system, they tell me.
Yeah, as I get older, there's more and more people coming into the game that have titles and letters behind their names that are telling me I have to do this and I have to do that. And it's like I've been doing this for 10 years and I've never once taken this test or done this thing. And it might be good for, they have some piece of science that tells it, but I'm not a big fan of all that stuff. I kind of say, you know, your own body better than anyone. You should know what you need to do. And, it's not like you became a professional and that's the first time you ever played soccer. Most of these guys came up through college and you should know how to treat yourself and handle yourself. And, but with that said, there is some things you can learn along the way. And that's what the scientists per se are here to try to help with.
Okay. So let's, before we get to the U.S., what else non-U.S. has struck you from a player's point of view about this World Cup? We know it's been crazy. It's been fantastic to watch as a fan. It's been fantastic to watch. Has anything stuck out to you as a player watching the action thus far?
Yeah, I watch a lot of like weird things. You know, I always say I see kind of a different perspective than, you know, I always see the crowd and, you know, when the game's going on, I'll see something in the crowd or something.
Seriously, I brought you on. You are our official Pitch Pass World Cup analyst. And you're going to tell me about what you see in the crowd?
Yeah, I'm going to tell you what I see off the ball. Because Okay. Everyone, you know, not to say that you can't comprehend the game on my level, but you're watching the ball all the time.
Yes, totally.
I watch the players, and if you watch the, I call it body language, you watch these guys, the teams that are winning games and the teams that are still around, they're usually the selfless teams. They're the teams like when someone scores, they're all celebrating, you know, they're all going over and dancing with each other.
Yeah.
They're having a good time. And the teams that have pretty much gone home, it's like one guy will score and you look and there'll be three or four guys that are, you know, they're not. They don't get excited. They're like, oh, well, he should have maybe passed that ball, or he should, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
They're in it more for themselves. Whereas, like for me, watching Colombia play, it's like it's one of the greatest things because they score and they all come up and go crazy and they dance and you know they all want what's good for the team, you know. And it's, you know, if a guy shoots the ball, a lot of them are, you know, they're clapping that guy saying, hey, you maybe could have laid it off, but I see you're trying to put the team on your back. And for me, that's pretty, you know, you watch a lot of these games in European play. That's probably what more people watch than anything, but I watch a lot of MLS games too. And, you know, there's always guys that they don't necessarily have the team's best interests in their minds. And usually those are teams that aren't making the playoffs or they're not making the Champions League and things like that. Whereas the teams that are, they're all committed to, you know, whatever's going to happen happens. They all celebrate together. They all are happy when something good happens. Those are the teams that that have been doing well. And I think this World Cup's just showing it more than anything that it's not about, you know, the individual player as much anymore. It's about, you know, what team is ready to give that extra bit and score the goals as a unit, as opposed to, you know, just letting the individual guys try to take it.
Now, look, Bobby, we're friends. So, you know, I'm going to say this, and I don't want you to get upset with me, but you are the official World Cup analyst for Pitch Pass. I said, hey, as a player, what are you seeing that the average fan isn't seeing? And your two things were, I'm looking at the crowd, and I'm looking to see who dances after scoring. Really? This is what your breakdown is for us? This is the analysis?
That's I mean, you know, like I said, I'm not necessarily following the ball, and if following the ball for you is what you took away from that, is that, then you're right on point.
Okay. Well, okay. Look. Let's pretend you are Taylor Twellman. You've got a fantastic wardrobe. You've got a fantastic wardrobe, a bit of an oversized head, but everybody's looking at you as the analyst. You've got the touch screen in front of you. You can hit buttons and move things all over the place. Would you move the camera to the Colombians dancing? Would you move it to the Costa Ricans in the crowd looking all sexy in their bikini tops?
No, I obviously you watch the game, but there is some, you know, if Columbia scores and they're dancing, I sure as heck want to see that over and over again.
Yeah, I do.
You know,
I do too. You're right.
I want to see the goal and I want to see the dancing. And if, you know, if there's some hot chicas in the crowd celebrating, I wouldn't mind seeing
them. So be it.
But you brought up Taylor. Do you think that commentators are getting kind of brutalized in this World Cup today's social media
completely
outlet?
Completely. And I think unnecessarily. I think these guys are doing a fantastic job, and I, you know, ESPN is going out with a bang. So to call these guys out on stuff, I mean, look, everybody's gonna make mistakes, but these guys by and large have been fantastic. Every single one of these analysts has been fantastic. So I don't get the hate on the Twitter about it.
Yeah, it seems to me like they're like the new referees. Like, it doesn't matter if they do a good job or, you know,
yeah,
like everyone hates them from both sides, no matter what they say. It's kind of funny, you know. People always say, do you ever think you could be a broadcaster? And you know, a couple, maybe 2 years ago, I would have said maybe, but now I see that they just get just slaughtered.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't even think they do it's not like they're making mistakes. They're just stating their opinions, kind of, calling the game from a neutral standpoint. They just get jacked down at the knees.
Again, that's why you keep your analysis to watch how they dance and look at the girls in the crowd. That's why you do what you do. I get it now. It's all making sense.
Yeah. I'm not going to tell you that, you know, someone should have made a different pass or anything like that. You know, maybe guys could have run faster. That'll be my analysis. Be completely, completely hypocritical. Say I would have run faster and I would have shot it in the corner a little better.
You know, you brought referees. You got to be smiling like a proud parent at Mark Geiger and his performance in the World Cup, right?
Yeah, I think he's done well. I think I got really nervous. They showed the 30 for 30, the two Escobars.
Yes.
And then the next game was the Colombia game, and he was the ref. And I was like,
oh no,
like, man, I'm genuinely nervous for his family right now. But I thought he did well. I think he's done well in all the games. And it's, you know, I'm not the biggest fan of Jersey guys in general, just people from Jersey, but I mean, I guess it could be worse. You could be from Philly. I think he's done well. I think he's made America proud, and I don't think anyone's, you know, looked at him and said, "Oh, he cost someone the World Cup." Or they're definitely doing that from some other countries.
Now, do you have the kind of relationship with him where when he's back in MLS, you can give him a little needling in the middle of a match?
Yeah, he's not really that type of guy. He's not a real big jokester. Like, you can't really make comments to him. I mean, he's not a big talker in terms of, you know, he can say, I think you got that wrong, and he'll tell you he didn't, and you should, you know, keep playing. He's not a big conversationalist. He usually gets the calls pretty good. You know, he's pretty correct. That's why he's at the World Cup.
Yeah.
So there's other guys that, you can have a little more, you know, you can talk with them, you can tell them, you can yell obscenities at them and they yell them back at you. And then there's, you know, there's some guys that don't, they don't want any of that. And you just kind of have to know who they are. But I've learned over my career that it's just better not to alienate the refs because, you know,
it's not going to end well. There's no good outcome to that.
It's a lose-lose.
Yeah. Yeah. So let's talk about U.S. first. By the way, I don't think I didn't realize that you did blow off my Netherlands comment, which is fine. I know you had them going to the final, but you did poo-poo them when we spoke last. I mean, I know you can tell me what you did off the Pitch Pass podcast, but on the Pitch Pass podcast, you didn't seem very excited or enthusiastic to talk about them, which gave me the impression that you weren't very high on them.
No, I think I was kind of worried that they let me think of the proper way to say this.
Yeah, because I know what you want to say, so why don't you say it in another way?
I would say it differently in the locker room.
Yeah, of course you would. I know exactly the term you want to use too.
They put all their chickens in the early basket.
Well, that's a horrible. They started off a little too quickly, and they may not have been able to finish as strongly because they started so fast.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I mean, it sounds like I'm explaining this to my 3-year-old. But yeah, the birds and the bees, you get it. I think that they, you know, I think they're in a good spot now. I just think that Mexico game was, between the heat and the refs stopping the game. I think it was good that they got through the game and they were able to, you know, kind of snatch a victory away that maybe. You know, some people don't feel they deserve, but does it really matter at this point? Now they're, you know, if they can get back, they're recovering and go out and play the typical orange soccer that they're supposed to play. I think they'll be sitting pretty.
Yeah, and I think that I totally agree with you. I thought that the Mexico game was the game where we get the typical. Everybody, the Dutch start off strong. Everybody gets behind them, says they're a contender, and then they lose in the round of 16 to a Mexico team that, and by the way, Ochoa was playing out of his mind. But I think getting through that match, and you mentioned in the humidity, I think that sets them up well for Costa Rica. Is it Costa Rica? Yeah, for Costa Rica this weekend, because now they've got their game faces back on. And, you know, I was, when I saw Van Persie coming off, I thought to myself, well, Van Gaal is losing it. How do you take off the one guy or of three guys they have that who can get a little creative piece of magic? He told me to shut my mouth because Huntelaar changed the game and scored the PK that won it.
Yeah, I mean, I think as long as Robin's on the field, you always have a chance at either a PK or some moment of brilliance. I mean, the guy it's literally kind of like, I don't want to compare him to LeBron James, but it's like, you know he's gonna do exactly the same thing every time.
The move.
You cannot stop him. It's unreal. I don't like all the diving. I think he's one of the few guys. I know earlier we talked about my great analysis of a player celebrating when someone scores. He's like the one guy that, you know, he never passes.
Ever.
Almost never. He always shoots, but it's like you watch that Champions League final and, you know, the semifinals, the quarterfinals, he does that. He misses. He gets to the final, he scores the goal and wins it for him. And that's just kind of the guy he is. So I think everyone's accepted that. And I think on the biggest stage, he's like, you know, you always say your winner, Shane Falco from The Replacement says, you know, he wants the ball. He's like the Shane Falco, Keanu Reeves of soccer nowadays. He wants the ball and he'll make the big play.
That's why you're the Pitch Pass World Cup analyst, because you bring out Keanu Reeves references. Very, very nice.
I mean, Keanu Reeves is just, you don't have enough time in the podcast for this, so I won't change the subject to him, but you get what I'm saying.
But I will.
He's Neo. He's the one.
I will say, though, and I'll ask you as the analyst, I'll throw you a question as the commentator, the host to the analyst. Did Mexico, I don't want to say stumble, but did they come up with the game plan to beat the Dutch, which is every time Robin touched the ball, three guys went to him, starve Van Persie of service and let somebody else beat you? Is that the game plan?
Yeah, I definitely think they swarmed him and they knew, like, if he doesn't get ahead of steam going, you know, he's not as effective. And I mean, you watch, he's had an important, in all the games, he's had important stretches where he kind of takes over and he's the danger, you know, and he can really, I think once guys can expose you, you know, make you start running back towards your own goal, you just have a lot of, you have a lot of trouble. And I think they kind of realize that. I thought Mexico had a great game plan. I thought Mexico was one of the surprising better teams of the World Cup for me, how well they played. And,
yeah.
You know, realistically, they were 5 minutes away from still being in it. But once you give up the goal, you kind of have to chase the game or you change the way you play. And then he's able to do what he does, you know. And, yeah, I don't think it's that easy. You know, I think Mexico is very talented, and they were playing very well at the right time. So I don't think you can just say, oh, well, we'll just put three guys on Robin, because they still have the service from other players that'll, you know, maybe I think the heat definitely affected Holland more than anything else. So from here on out, you know, they'll probably, unless they're playing in Manaus, which isn't going to happen,
nope,
they're going to be fine.
Well, and, you know, go ahead.
I think the crazy thing is they might not face another big, you know, quote unquote big team.
Yeah, well, because their bracket. Really, yeah,
it's not just their bracket. I mean, I think at this point for me, I think Colombia, you know, that Colombia is looking pretty dangerous coming out there. You know, Germany didn't look overwhelming.
Wait. Colombia over the host country. Now I know Brazil's hasn't been playing well at all, but you still feel like Colombia goes in there as the favorite.
I've got Colombia beating Brazil, yes.
Well, in your revised bracket, you didn't have them coming out of the group in your first bracket, though, did you?
Who, Colombia?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, look.
I had Chile beating Brazil.
Wow.
I didn't even have Brazil here, so I had Colombia beating them, and then I think I have Germany beating France, and I don't think that'll happen now with the 120 minutes today, but... and then I've got the Germans playing Holland in the final, but I wouldn't be surprised if Colombia is there. I really wouldn't.
Well, let me ask you this, because you brought up something. Both teams, France and Germany, play today, as you brought up, as we record, which was on Monday. Germany played the extra 30 minutes. You're saying, if I can infer your comments correctly, that's going to take a toll. That makes that much of a difference coming back.
I think with the quick turnaround and the environment they're in, I think if it was a 90-minute game, you know, maybe they'll find a way, but I don't think they were, I don't know. I just, France has been good. And I think you put them in an even scenario, I think Germany would win. But I think now with the, I don't know. I just feel like France watches that and they say, you know, we've got a little bit more to offer than was put on them today, and I think they go out and get it done now.
And even at the end,
I hope they don't. I hope Germany wins, and I hope Germany and the Netherlands play in the final. Then I'll look like a genius.
Even you already do look like a genius to us, Bobby. Even if it had gone only 90 minutes, I'm talking about the Germany Algeria match. That was a hard 90 minutes. I mean, there's different levels of playing 90 minutes. Not saying France had an easy time of it, but Germany was definitely stretched and definitely had a hard 90, if that's a thing.
Yeah, I think the way that they matched up, it was it's hard to say. I know I'm the analyst, but I haven't watched enough of Algeria and enough of Nigeria to tell you
who's a better
matchup there. But I think, you know, once again, it's like people were so shocked that Germany was struggling, and it's like it's 0-0 and they haven't given up too many crazy opportunities. But they were like, oh, the Germans are, you know, Michael Ballack was killing Germany, saying he would have made 8 subs at halftime. And it's like the Germans have this expectation that they're going to just go out and blow teams out. And I think it's unrealistic at this World Cup, you know, with all the things that are happening. I think the rest of the world is getting better and they have good, you know, good teams with good game plans. And it, you know, when you have that many guys committed to a game plan, it's tough for any team to break them down. So, you know, now you're looking at a team with a little more quality going forward. You know, I don't know. It should be a heck of a game to watch, but, If you had to ask me based on today, I'm going to say I think France has the edge.
As a center back, what would be your impression of playing with Neuer as your keeper on a club level or in a country level? Are you?
He freaked me out watching the game. I thought the guy was kidding when he said, the announcer said he had that's his 14th time off the line. And I was like, oh, that's kind of a small number if you're going to over exaggerate it, you know?
Yeah.
And he was like, no, really, that was the real number. And it was like, I mean, you know, he got my vote last year for we do the FIFA voting player of the year. You know, you vote for all that stuff. And he was my goalie for the FIFA goalie of the year. But that for me, I would have a heart attack. And, you know, you can play that game. You could get it right, you know, 9 times out of 10, but all it takes is that one time. And
exactly, that's what I thought. It's all it takes is you could have those histrionics every single time, and it looks great, and the fans ooh and ah, but you just miss once, and you look horrific giving up that goal.
Yeah, it's a cruel game in that regard. But to his credit, you know, it was like he was, you know, he was making plays. He was almost playing like a sweeper,
exactly.
a keeper sweeper. He was, I think he took it a little too literal. And, but I mean, you know, there's like one play he runs by the ball and then ends up slide tackling the guy for a corner. And I'm like, who is this guy? You know, I'm used to goalies, you know, that, tripping on themselves.
Yeah.
And, you know, but.
Well, at what point do you have a quiet word?
I wouldn't enjoy that. So.
What point do you have a quiet word with him?
That's going to be one of those where, you know, like a married couple, you kind of like say like, hey babe, I'm thinking about signing myself up for a gym membership. Do you want me to join, you know, you as well? Cause you don't want to say like you're putting on the LBs. You kind of just, you bring her along with you. You kind of say, hey, you know, I can just kick that ball out of bounds. They pay me millions of dollars to do that. And just that you stay in your goal where they pay you millions of dollars to stay in between the posts and, you know, see, you know, maybe go spend like an obscene amount of money on a dinner to say like, don't ever do that again.
Now, analysts will tell you that the reason he's doing this is because the German center backs are not fleet of foot. And as somebody who has been rumored to not be fleet of foot, I thought maybe your answer might spin going, hey, you know what? He's covering me, you know. But no, that none of that factors in. Still gives you a heart attack. Still don't want it.
Well, I just thought it was funny. Like if my parents were watching the World Cup and the guy said that, you know, he was like, oh, he's known for how slow he is. Like that's like pretty offensive. But
yes.
I was thinking, if you're the starting center back, you know, for
Germany
national team, like I really doubt that, you know, there's anyone getting offended by those kinds of comments, but maybe that's why, you know, I'm not on the German national team.
All right,
blame my parents.
Let's talk.
I blame my parents.
I blame them as well. I mean, you
it's
Tampa.
Genetic.
All right. So let's talk US before we let you go. Obviously we're recording this the night before the big match. If you had to speculate right now, would you say that the Jozy Altidore revelation that he's fit and available, is that posturing on Jurgen's part, or do you see him having a chance to start?
Well, I think it's better to start him and have him go out early than to kind of wait and let, you know, because I think that their whole, the way that we played and the way we prepared for this World Cup was.
Now, wait, can we say we moving forward to this whole thing?
Did I not say we?
I'm saying, can we do that? Is it because we're Americans and this is a national team, we can say we?
Oh,
I'm asking
absolutely.
You. Okay, all right, I'm just making sure. Because when I'm talking about DC United, I don't say, hey, we needed to get those 3 points or at least a point from Seattle, and we didn't, because I didn't have anything to do with the match. But because it's the national team, we can
you
now
might,
say
you might
we.
You want to rethink that, though, in the city you live in where you collect a paycheck. What's the name of your radio station?
DC 101.
What is the first part of that?
You're right. It's almost like we are owned by the same company.
I'm just throwing that out there, but
okay.
Like, I'm just saying, you can say we in the city, you know.
But do you say we for your favorite football team?
Yeah, when I say we, I'm either talking about the Tampa Bay Bucks
or
the Washington Redskins.
Wow.
or the team that I'm supporting that's winning.
It's always we for you. We.
Yeah, so sports are a way to connect us with things that we wouldn't normally be able to connect with.
All right, fair enough. But I'm going to say we for this.
We, yes. Tomorrow, we, or maybe later today, depending on when this is being listened to by millions of people.
Millions.
I think we need Josie on the field because I think we prepared for him to be on the field. And if he's available in some capacity, it's better to give him a go at the beginning of the game with the intentions of saying, okay, he might only last 30 minutes or something might happen, and then you bring in one of the other guys, as opposed to, all right, we're going to play someone up front and kind of alter the way that we prepared, and then say we'll bring him on late, and turns out he's got a lot more in the tank than we thought he did, and it's too late.
That's it. Dude, that is really good analysis right there.
I mean, that's what I do. Why am I here?
Because my thing was, if he's just coming off of an injury, let's bring him on the 75th minute and see what we got. But in a round of 16 match where there is no draw, it's not just 15 minutes. Now you've got to, if it goes to extra time, then you've got that on top. And if he comes up lame in the 105th minute, you probably have used up all your subs by then, in which case
you're
screwed.
More under the gun.
Yeah. So start him.
I also think from a player's perspective, you know, when a guy, you know, I've been on teams where when you know a guy's carrying something, you know, say you're a Chris Wondolowski or Johansson or, you know, any of the forwards, you know, you have in the back of your mind tonight, you know, going to bed, even if they say we're going to start Josie tomorrow, you have in your head the idea that I could be coming on in the third minute of the game.
You're prepped.
So you begin preparing yourself mentally, whereas you look at the first game where he goes down, you know, no one's really ready for that. They weren't expecting that, and it kind of was visible in the way that the guys played that, you know, that came on. So this way, or this time around, you say, look, we're going to put him on, let him try to blow it out, see what he can do. But just know that, you know, he is carrying something. So those guys are sitting there. They warm up differently.
Wow.
They're prepared. You know, like I said, they're prepared mentally in case that happens. So if it does happen, the guys, it's just like, boom, this guy's in. Here's what we're doing. We already are aware of that. But I definitely think if he is as available as they're making him sound, I definitely think you have to start him just because of how we prepared and all those weeks building up to it, you know, the 2 months before. We prepared playing with Josie up top. That was kind of the style that brought us some success right before it. And I think we got to go out there and do that again.
You ever have a broken nose? And obviously the second part of the question is challenges that you face inherently when you walk out onto a pitch with a broken nose.
I did have a broken nose, but I had to go to the hospital.
Jeez.
I had reconstructive facial surgery in Turkey.
That's right. I remember during your Turkish adventure, your European sojourn.
Yeah, that was so cool. I mean, it was when they don't have anyone that speaks English in the hospital to tell you that you have to have surgery on your face, and they make an airplane symbol and they say, you no fly.
Okay.
That was really cool. But I have had a broken nose. That was the only time I didn't come back out and play. So I can't speak. I can't speak on that part.
But it definitely affected me.
It did affect me for a little while after, you know, going up for headers, and you know, you are a little more reluctant to put your face in places that it's gonna sound terrible. But yeah, you get what I'm saying.
Yeah, you could have finished the sentence. We all could have chuckled at your whatever comment you were gonna make about putting your face in places.
my wife's not mature enough to hear that and not say something.
All right, so do me a favor. And tell me, because as a player, I know you're going to rush to his defense as well you should. As a fan, we look at Michael Bradley and go, man, this guy's killing us this tournament. Tell us why Michael Bradley is not killing us this tournament.
Well, I think that a lot of teams, I think anyone that did their homework on us, you know, they looked at our team, and I think he was probably the focal point. He was the one that they wanted to disrupt, and you know, they, you know, you watch that the first half of that Mexico game that we play. I mean, he was, you know, he was like, looked like the best player in the world. And I think anyone that did their homework and they developed scouting reports on the U.S., they said everything goes through this guy. I think the expectations are that get him the ball. And you know, if he's, you know, kind of like we talked about with Robin, I think that, you know, you really saw it in the first game with a guy like Muntari, who just, he's just a hunter and a killer.
Yeah.
But I think other teams have realized that if they can disrupt him, they can kind of disrupt our real presence on the ball. And that's why a lot of these games have seemed kind of like we haven't had a whole lot of possession, and it's kind of an ugly game and this and that. It's because, you know, he's one of our guys that we kind of count on to get the ball and do well. And I think teams are just going after him. And in the same regard, it's opened up the game for a guy, you know, a guy like Jermaine Jones.
Yeah.
You know, people are saying, oh, he's playing great. And it's, you know, sometimes it's hard to focus on more than one or two guys to try to shut them down. So if they're focused on shutting down Clint and shutting down Michael, then it's going to open the door for some of the other guys. And it's, you know, can they seize the moment? And I think Jermaine has, you know, and it's, you know, a guy like Graham Zusi could maybe do it, or there's other guys out there, but it's hard for someone, you know, playing international quality players in the games that we play when they're hunting you down and trying to keep you off your game. There's good enough players on all those teams to really make it ugly. And, you know, maybe he's not having the tournament that people thought he would, but that doesn't mean he's not impacting us in a positive way. You know, they could still, like I said, it opens the door for other guys. I mean, you look at a guy like Messi, teams try to do it. It's just, he's so good.
He's Messi. Yeah.
That they can't do it. Same with Robin. You know, and Michael's, I think he's a world-class player. He's just not quite on the level where when he's getting taken out of the game by some of the better players, he can't make as big of an impact on the game as we're used to seeing against, you know, some of the opponents we played in qualifying. You know, it's not quite the same level, unfortunately, but I still think it doesn't mean that he's not impacting us in a good way.
I said that Van Gaal basically told me to shut the hell up with his substitution patterns. Klinsmann has done a huge shut the hell up to American soccer fans, maybe the media, with who he brought, how he's deployed the people that he's brought, and the results that he's achieved with how he's deployed the people that he's brought. Were you shaking your head at all at Yedlin being on the team and then being used and then going, oh, wow? Or was this a guy that you thought to yourself, you know, he can do a job down there, and if called upon, he'll be ready?
I'm a little, you know, the rumors in our locker room.
Ah, breaking news. Yeah. Let's go.
No, I'm just saying he's a well-respected player. People that have played with a guy like Yedlin say he's a beast, he's a freak. He's a great player. So it's, you know, it's not like guys are saying like, oh, that guy doesn't belong there. So, you know, it's hard to judge someone you haven't really played with and even played against a whole lot. But, you know, when other players that have played with him are saying like, yeah, he's legit, he belongs there, that's, you know, usually good enough. But I've been on the U.S.'s, I've been on the bandwagon, even when we lost down in Honduras, when everyone was asking what's going on. I, you know, it upset me that people were kind of, you know, dogging our league, saying, oh, I can't believe he's going with all these MLS guys. And my whole thing was, is these guys are still professional soccer players. And, you know, they get paid to go out and play the game at a high level every day. And, you know, I believe in our league, and I believe in what we're doing. And it, for me, it was great that they got a chance. You know, he gave some of these guys a chance to go out and prove what they can do. And now you've got a lot of MLS guys starting and doing well in the World Cup. So I've been a big fan of him giving the guys a chance. You know, there are some decisions that maybe I don't agree with, you know, leaving guys out or taking guys, but I'm not a coach. I don't get paid to do that. And I think, like you said, he's shut a lot of people up. You know, people were saying we weren't even going to qualify. We won the qualifying group in terms of getting to the World Cup. They said we weren't going to get out of our group. We're out of our group. And now it's like people are going, oh, maybe we can win. And I almost want them to say, no, we're going to get killed because you haven't believed in us before. Don't believe in us now. Let us keep going, you know? So, you know, I think we'll win tomorrow. I really do. I think we'll get by these guys. And, you know, from there, it's a real dreamers game. But, I think right now there's no reason to believe that we can't do it. And, those guys seem to be on board. And I think they're kind of saying we always believe we could do it. And now other people are starting to say, like, holy crap, maybe we should believe too.
Bobby, it's like you don't even get on social media and you have no idea about branding. All I've heard for the last 2 minutes is, I think that we can beat Belgium. I think that it's, I believe that we will win, Bobby. That's the phrase to use. I believe that we will win. You know how it goes.
Well, my only problem with that is, I think, I correct me if I'm wrong, I know that's like the American Outlaws. Did that start, though, in Kansas City?
I have no idea where it started.
I think it did. When you play in Kansas City, they call it Blue Hell, and they go crazy. They do that every time. And when I played in Houston, we had so many wars with them.
Oh, okay. All right.
That I was just so sick of that saying.
I got it. Okay.
I was literally at a karaoke bar and then not too far past, and literally a girl went up and she didn't even sing a song. She just said, I believe. And literally the whole place did it. And I was,
you felt, you were pride,
like, baffled because there was like a Journey song on before and not everyone knew the words, but everyone knew the words to the, I believe that we will win. And, it was kind of cool. It was kind of weird. I wasn't really sure what was going on, but, you know, it's making an impact. That's the coolest part.
So I know that you're friendly with some of the guys on the team, and you're especially close to guys like Jeff Cameron. You played with Brad Davis. Both of them have had ups and downs this tournament. Have you had a chance to speak with either of them at this point? And could you share maybe what some of their mindset is if you have?
Yeah, I've had a little bit of conversation with Jeff. You know, not Brad, not as much. I don't talk to Brad as much as you would think. Someone would that played with him for so long, but that, you know, we kind of do our own thing.
All right, I'm gonna read between the lines on that, but go ahead.
No, I mean, I'm happy for Brad, and I think what he's done is amazing. He's earned it. It's nothing. There's not more to read to that.
All
but
right.
Jeff and I are close, and all that, you know, Jeff and I don't usually talk soccer, and we haven't during the World Cup either. It's just which tells me that he's
in good spirits.
He's doing well. Yeah. Everything's fine in his camp. Everything's good in his head. You know, I'm not a guy that he doesn't really confide in me. You know, he might say, "Did you see the game? Did you see that I you know, what did you think on this play or that play?" But he definitely didn't do that this, you know, this World Cup for any of the games. You know, and I wish I could tell you that he was injured or something, was, you know, he just got benched. I don't know what happened with the Omar Gonzalez situation, but he's definitely still in high spirits, and that's what I'm saying. I think he's happy for the team, regardless. He's putting the team above himself.
Yeah.
And it's not like he's mad that he didn't play that game and that Omar did well and the team, you know, he's just happy that they're where they're at, and he knows he's a big part of that, and you know, all is normal with him. He's excited and he's still himself. So that, for me, that's a good sign.
You know, I'm not even going to ask you your prediction. I mean, you've said that you think that they will win. And I, you know, scores are scores, just get through. And no matter how you do it, you know, they got through the group of death. To me, if you got through that and you came out successfully, none of these matches should be, I don't want to say intimidating, but you should go in with the mindset of, look, we got through the group of death. We can win any of these matches that we have moving forward. And that's what I feel like with Belgium, especially the way I've seen Belgium play. Belgium's been sleepwalking through about half of this tournament. And then they've turned it on and then turned it off again. So, you know, you don't know how they're going to come out. And just because they are a European team doesn't mean that that's the end all be all, especially with the way the U.S. has been playing. And I know you agree, correct?
Yeah, I think, you know, I think they traveled the least of any team in the World Cup, and the U.S. traveled more of any team. And, you know, I think they scored all their goals in like the end of the game. But that doesn't mean anything now. It's one game, you know, and that's why I was saying, if we just go out and as long as those guys are all committed to the game plan and they believe in it. And, you know, I think that they've played against some teams that are, you know, equally as good, if not better, than the team they're going to play tomorrow. And it's just that they can go out and put the right performance together. You know, I think I like our chances. So if you want me to predict, I'm going to go a little crazy. I think that Belgium's not giving up. I think they've given up one goal. It was a PK. I think we score three on them tomorrow.
What? You're drunk.
I think we score three on them. I think it's going to be a, I think it'll be a 2-1 game close to the end, and we bury them at the end. A 3-1 game is my prediction.
How? You know, they have one of the best keepers in the world right now, right?
Courtois. Yeah, well.
You realize that.
I mean, I do. Your keeper's only as good as the guys in front of him. And, you know, I think that they've got some great talent, but I still believe,
Here we go. Here we go. Yes.
I believe that tomorrow we will score three goals against Courtois.
Here's what I'll say. Here's what I'll say, Bobby.
How about like an early, like Jozy Altidore behind the defense, Courtois takes him out, red card, PK.
Wow.
That would
jeez.
Just, like 8th minute of the game. That would just, that for me, that would just be an amazing feeling.
I want to throw this out there, and I might look stupid because I don't know really what I'm talking about, but maybe you as an analyst will back me up and then I'll have some cred. But I will say I kind of am familiar with this Belgian team because a lot of them came through Ajax, which, you know, I know a lot about. So the one thing I will say is Belgium is a big fan of playing center backs as fullbacks. And so maybe some U.S. speed, some Fabian Johnson and some DeMarcus Beasley overlapping runs will leave them a little bit vulnerable. And then if you get Vincent Kompany not playing, I don't know if he's playing or not playing, but that situation comes through for the Vermaelen situation. I feel like they might be vulnerable to outside runs.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely agree with that.
Thank you.
I do. And I also think, you know, I've played with center backs that have been forced to play out wide and they don't like it. They don't, you know, you have a little bit more of a cushion, you know, and center backs, you know, they kind of, some are really aggressive, but most of them, they like to see the game. And when you have another guy behind you, you kind of feel out of place, I think. So, you know, maybe that works in our favor, but, you know, you can analyze it up and down all you want. It's just going to come down to who puts the better performance on the day. And yeah, you got your Ajax boys. That means they want to play possession style. Maybe we can strip them. I think they put a lot of numbers in going forward. They all want to score the goals. And, you know, I think that we'll be a compact unit. So it'll be a little harder for them to, you know, we can maybe hit them on the counter. And that's where a guy like Jozy comes in big. But, you know, I think we'll definitely have a game plan for these guys, and we're gonna believe in it. You know, and I think they realize now that how much support they have back here, and I think as Americans, you know, they thrive in situations where the limelight's on them, and hopefully tomorrow is no different.
Well, we've done an hour, which I think is more than enough analysis. I don't know if we're gonna go at the end of this week. We'll probably wait until next week to do record and.
Okay.
I mean, the thing is, if you
when play Colombia's in the final,
so you say. If you played against Michael Bradley on Saturday, we'll know things didn't go well.
Yeah, that's the other thing, right? I mean, even though I had Chile winning, I was still rooting for Brazil, just based on the fact that Julio Cesar might be back in Toronto, and. You know, I have even a lot more reason to root for the U.S. tomorrow than Michael Bradley being back in
exactly.
Toronto. But the crazy part is people are saying, oh, well, maybe he'll, you know, maybe having played on Tuesday, he'll be tired. And I'm like, the guy's a robot. He's like a running robot. So he'll definitely be ready.
Okay, so wait, are you saying if they lose on Tuesday, you're saying there is a 100% chance that he walks onto BMO for TFC on Saturday to play DC United?
I don't say
not 100, but you'd be surprised if he wasn't there.
I would be surprised if honestly, even if Ryan Nelson told him to go on a vacation somewhere, I would be surprised if he wasn't out there on the field.
And he probably won't be in good spirits either.
Yeah, well, I mean, he should. Even if these guys go out and lose tomorrow, they should be proud of what they've done.
Definitely.
So I know he had an interesting quote that I kind of liked, and I don't think people, as a soccer player that's played, he said it's a man's game, and that you have to be a man and take chances. And be willing to deal with that. And for me, that's a great quote for young kids and people that want to become pro soccer players. Or, it's a saying that you have to kind of high risk to get high rewards, but you also have to be willing to accept the failures that go along with taking big risks. So, there's a lot of guys that go out and they don't try to do things that maybe they could get away with and pull off in a game because they're too afraid of what could happen. And that's kind of what he said after he gave away the ball that Portugal ends up scoring. He said it's a man's game, and if you want something, you have to go out and take it. And that's his mentality. And I like that. I think that, that's why I have so much confidence in them tomorrow. I think that a lot of guys out there are saying, we're going to go out and we're going to try to win this game, and try to take the win from this Belgium team. And, when you have a bunch of guys that are willing to do that, I think you will be rewarded. That's why I think he'll be ready if they don't make it through to play again, because he looks at it from a pretty good perspective.
That was heavy, dude. Like I got chills. I felt very patriotic. I felt very empowered. I felt like I got words of wisdom to pass along to my sons. All in that one statement of you breaking down Michael Bradley's quote. Wow, dude.
Hey, maybe now you can say we when you talk about the U.S. team.
I always said we. I just not with D.C. United, I didn't say we. Come on.
Okay.
All right.
Well,
so
baby steps.
We're going to see. We'll talk to you then next week as we break down the semifinals and then into the finals as we wrap up our World Cup coverage next week with our World Cup soccer analyst, D.C. United's very own Bobby Boswell. Thank you, sir. I appreciate the time as always.
All right. Have a good one.
Show information, go to pitchpass.com.